Let us think this morning from a verse from 2 Kings chapter 3. Chapter 3 is entitled Your Devotional Service. That's in this chapter, very subject. And the verse is going to be text number 23. It comes two-thirds of the way through the chapter. And it comes just after some very nice verses and just before another very nice verse. The verse that follows 23 is the still playing heart verse. You know that verse? Certainly that heart is still in which, in spite of one's chanting the holy name of the Lord with concentration, does not change in ecstasy taking place, tears in the eyes, and hearing stand on end. It's the coming of darkness. And so it's all building up to that kind of crescendo. The verses preceding, immediately preceding, are a whole series of verses where we're hearing about the total uselessness of this human form of life if not dedicated to the service of the Lord. The assertion has been made prior to that that the way of life that's recommended for everyone, those about to die and those that don't know whether they're about to die or not, everybody, is devotional service exclusively upon the personality of Godhead. That's enriched by the process of hearing and chanting. So hearing and chanting about the topics of Krishna, Hari Katha, that's what we should do. Always hear, chant, and remember. Shrotavya, Kirtitavya, Chant, Dhyaya, Pujas, Chant, Nityada, Nityada. You know this from the first canto, Nitya. Nitya Mahalaya, Sarvaya, which is regularly, always, or regularly, Dhyaya, Pujas, Chant, Nityada. Hari Katha, I should always be here, regularly at least, and serving the Supreme Lord according to the inspired motives of devotion that comes from that hearing. So, the persons speaking these verses are the sages of Naimisharanya. The sages of Naimisharanya, they heard from Sutta what took place when chapter 19, canto 1 ended, when Maharaj Pariksit asked his question, Shukadeva Goswami began speaking, so they described the exchange. Sutta described the exchange. Now the sages are saying, what happened next? Because these two persons, how qualified is Shukadeva Goswami? How qualified is Maharaj Pariksit? Surely they must have asked other questions and had other discussions. Surely that must have been the case. Please tell us, what was their discussion? Then, just to give you a flavor, next comes this, by the rising and the setting of the sun, the duration of life of the non-devotee who doesn't engage in these activities, the life is taken away. what do they gain through the passage of day and night? They're closer to death. There's no gain. Except one utilizes their time by discussing Krishna Katha. Because by discussing the topics of Krishna Katha, one is that much, one day's closer to the ball of life. Back home, back to Godhead. Then they go on this explosion of saying it literally now, what's the use of life if it's not dedicated that way? Do not the trees fit it? Or why the trees are like, what makes us any better than a tree? Don't be in their life and don't subsist. Then when I argue, well, trees will breathe, we breathe for them. But do not develop in the blacksmith. Also breathe. Well, they don't reproduce. Do not the beasts eat and discharge semen? Then this smoke big grapples to creators. Then will my dogs, hogs, cows, asses. Praying in those men who never listen to the transcendental practice of Lord Sri Krishna. These are complex spoken. How these verses often in small vidvara postrakai. One who has not, so in other parts of the body, one who has not listened with the ears to the messages about the prowess of the morals, acts of the personality of Godhead. And how, so this is like dedication. It's the reverse of Maharaj Ambarish. Maharaj Ambarish, famous verse, Savai Manak Krishna Padaram in Deo. He each day would fix his mind on the personality of Godhead. And then with each of his senses, you know the verse, yeah? With his hands, he would cleanse the temple of the floor. With his eyes, he would see the beautiful deity form of the Lord. With his ears, he would hear the topics glorifying the Lord. With his legs, he would walk to the temple of the Lord. Using the senses, knowledge acquiring and working the senses, the practical activity, follow the mind fixing the mind on the Lord, or support fixing the mind upon the Lord. But if one doesn't do that, the ears not hearing, the voice not singing, and loudly chanting the worthy songs about the Lord, is to be considered to possess ear holes like the holes of snakes, and a tongue, the tongue of fowl, like the tongue of a tree. Next reports. The upper portion of the body, the crown of the silk turban, is only a heavy burden, if not bowed down before the personality of Godhead, who could work for me. And the hands are decorated with glittering bangles, are like those of a dead man, if not engaged in the service of the personality of Godhead, but he. So, one more. The eyes, which do not look at the deity of the Lord, are like those pictured plumes of peacock, and the legs, which do not move to the holy places where the Lord is remembered, are considered to be like tree trunks. What's the use of the facilities of senses? this. So there, it's, in one sense, it's like nivritti. It's diminishing or eliminating useless, non-devotional way of life. And it's reaffirming or committing, surrendering fully to a devotional way of life. And this morning's verse 23 is how to access that. It says it again in reverse logic, by saying reverse logic, it confirms the positive or the affirmative procedure or path. The verse is the person who does not in time receive the dust from the feet of the Lord's pure devotees upon his head is certainly a dead body. Jiva, Chano, Bhagavatam Giriyanam, Bhagavatam. Angri Vendam. The dust of the Lord's feet of the Bhagavatam. Vendam. Angri Vendam. Bhagavatam Angri Vendam. It's certainly a dead body. Jiva Chavo. And the person who has never experienced the aroma of the Tulsi leaves from the lotus feet of the Lord is also a dead body, although breathing. And where do we know the experiencing the aroma of the Tulsi leaves from the lotus feet of the Lord? Where in Srimad Bhagavatam does that come? Four Kumaras? Yes? They're outside the gates of Vaikuntha. They had not yet seen the Lord or entered into Vaikuntha. But their Brahman realization was transformed into Bhagavan realization just by this one thing. The fragrance of the sandalwood and the tulsi buds on the lotus feet of the Lord. He became attractive. But principally, in the purport addresses this idea of the dust of the lotus feet. There are several, this is one of several references to bear in mind when you hear of this idea of dust from the lotus feet of the Lord. It's there in Vrishabhdev's teachings to his sons. It's there in Prahlad's, Maharaj's prayers in 7th Canto. Here in the second canto, chapter 3, text 23, that person who does not receive Bhagavata Angri Veno is a Jivan Shava, a dead body. So, first part of the report, Prabhupada is explaining. Was referring to Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentary, where Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, what's this dead body although breathing? What's a dead body although breathing? Because, you know, breathing means life. The dead body although breathing is ghost. Here's the problem, right? The breathing dead body is a ghost. When a man dies, he's called dead. But when he again appears in a subtle form and not visible to our present vision, and yet acts, such a dead body is called ghost. Ghosts are always very bad elements, always creating a fearful situation for others. Similarly, here's the comparison, ghost-like non-devotees who have no respect for the pure devotees, nor for the Vishnu deity in the temples, the previous verses that are spoken. They don't go to the place to see the forms of Vishnu in the temple, nor do they care to offer respect to the devotees of the Lord. Like a ghost, they create a fearful situation for the devotees at all times. The Lord never accepts any offering from such impure ghosts. If someone wants to offer, their disposition is not to offer, because they're not devotees. But if for some apparent reason to do something like that, he's not obliged to accept. He often accepts when there's love and devotion. So then, that's the first part of the report. Prabhupada then goes into how to approach the Lord is by approaching the devotee of the Lord. And he gives the example of to approach a person, a big person, you may approach the dog of the big person. It was a practical situation with in his travels. Prabhupada would take morning walks in one of the places in New York City, one of the few places you can go for walks, or go for walks in parks. When you go for walks in parks, something like in India today. Well, now Indians today, people are jogging and doing their exercises, but they also take their dogs for walks. So Prabhupada was making this point. There's a big person who lives in Manhattan, and you try to go see him in his office and forget it. And he's too big. You can't just walk in and see him. You've seen him out walking his dog. You go say hello to the dog and you scratch under the chin of the dog. Oh, you have such a cute dog. And immediately you made a friend with a big man. Just like that. An approachable person, immediately you can say anything to him. Because you made a friend with his dog. Similarly, the stage of pure devotion is attained by sincerely serving the pure devotee of the Lord. The stage of pure devotion is attained by sincerely serving the pure devotee of the Lord. The first condition of devotional service to the Lord is, therefore, to be a servant of a pure devotee. He just took the word over and put it in reverse. Said the same thing again. And this condition is fulfilled by the statement, quote, reception of the dust of the lotus feet of a pure devotee who has served another pure devotee, unquote. So get that dust. Then he gives another example. The other example, next example, is Maharaj Mahugana. Who is Maharaj Mahugana? So who is Maharaj Mahugana? He was the king. And after Bharat Maharaj had left the world, sometime later Mahugana became king and Bharat Maharaj became Jed Bharat. So Jed Bharat is carrying the palanquin and he's avoiding stepping on ants, and the king is getting bounced, and being, the king looks over the palanquin and says, what kind of palanquin carrier are you? Don't you know who I am? I'm the king. You better carry better. Big trouble. And Jed Bharat, who has previously been not speaking anything, speaks. He speaks such transcendental knowledge. The king is astonished. The king gets up and down from the palace and then pays obeisances to his palanquin carrier and says, whoa, you're not just a palanquin carrier, you're a perfectly realized soul. And how did this happen? And this is the verse. It happened because he received the dust of the lotus feet of a human body. Rahubinaita tapasaha na yaki vichajaya nirapadam gahadhara. This is how he didn't get it. But nina mahatpada rato vishetam mahatpada raja vishetam raja or rena. I'll be shaken. Now he took some dust, but I'll be shaken with dust. I've smeared the dust all over his body. Oh, King Rahugan, the perfectional stage of devotional service or the Paramahamsa stage of life cannot be attained unless one is blessed by the dust of the feet of great devotees. It is never attained by the pasya, by yaja, by sannyas, by chanting of the Vedic hymns, jalagni, suryai, by penances in the hot sun, within cold water, before the blazing fire. Persons try. I was visiting one of our restaurants in America, Govinda's restaurant. And just outside the restaurant, they had a little reading room. There so people could sit down and, you know, picture some of Prabhupada's books, but some of other books. And listen. It was a nice, very pleasing atmosphere. And one of those, you know, a table, a really big picture book, looked like people looked at it a lot. It was opened up to one page and I just looked at it. There's this picture of in the middle of the summer with a row of fire built around the husky doing his meditation. Then flip the page and there's this yogi lying on cactus. Big cactus with big thorns. He's lying down flat, his little, you know, begging bowl by the side, and I don't know what he was doing, but he was lying there on a cactus. Then another one was the Gangotri, you know, with black device floating around, and his big beard floating on the surface of the water. All you can see is the surface of his face and his beard floating on the water, and you see his arm. And another one was, and it's buried in the sand. It was just like a protruding tube sticking into the sand. Buried under the sand, the hot sand. Just one can't get the mercy of Krishna that way. The idea is to control the senses and to be able to withstand, you know, really strong demands of the senses, not given to them. So make the mind strong, deny the demands of the senses. But that is inferior, or it's not, you can't accomplish what receiving the dust in the lotus feet of the devotee, of whom devotee can accomplish. So now comes the concluding paragraph. In other words, Prabhupada writes, Lord Sri Krishna is the property of his pure and conditional devotees. That's right in the middle of the third point here. Krishna is the property of his pure and conditional devotees. Well, Krishna is independent, he's not anybody's property, but he places himself like that because of pure devotion to his devotees. I am yours. And the devotee is saying, I am yours. So it's very nice. In the six processes of surrender, one of them is Atmanivedana. And the Atmanivedana process involves this denial of proprietorship, false proprietorship. So, what can we say belongs to us? Generally we say things like, you know, my wealth and things that wealth can buy. My shoes, my kurta, my socks, my pen, my recorder. Objects. Drug use. Possessions. So one may want to give up those possessions and say, Nirmama, I have nothing is mine. But otherwise, we also say, my body. But can we claim the body is mine? The answer is, no, and proof that it's not mine is, it will be taken away from me. It belongs to someone else. So the objects, we also say my friend, my mother, my family, my nation, so extensions of home in the bodily conception of life. So none of those things are wrong. Those things are not mine, the relationships are not mine, the body is not mine. What about the soul? Philosophically, we can say the soul is Krishna's property. I mean, Krishna said it. Every living being is his para prakriti. A brain impressed on yam prakriti that he made para. We can't even say that the soul is mine. So, what's the spiritual conception of mine? The spiritual conception of mind is that our relationship with Krishna is ours, and no one can take that. It's mine, and even Krishna doesn't take it. It's eternally ours. That's what's mine. People are very attached to things that they consider mine. My wealth, my family, my nation, my religion, my shoes. When people go to a temple and their shoes get taken, they don't like it. In Ramanujacharya's teachings, he had some sannyasis who were wondering, why are you showing so much affection to this attached householder and his wife? Look at all of his opulence. He struts around. You're fixed in Narayan, and why do you care for somebody that's so materially opulent and ostentatious? He said, I will show you. So he said, one night, go into the sannyasi ashram. Move their clothes around. Put this one's clothes over there, that one's clothes over there, and that one's clothes over there, and that one's clothes over there. And watch when they get up in the morning and see what happens. Who took my copings? Who took my money? It was an eye opener. So then they said, now go to the home of this couple. Wait till the husband has gone from the home and go in, inside the home and steal their jewelry, watch what happens. So, following Ramanujacharya's direction, the husband had gone from the home, the wife was lying, and he stole all the jewels that she had from one side of her body, and then she rolled over. Well, now I'm going to steal the jewels from the other side, because he thought, oh, this is so poor, he must really be in a desperate situation. This is Ramanuja's disciple. He must be really poor over the ashram there. So as soon as he rolled over, he ran from the room, and the husband came home, and she told what had happened, and he said, why did you do that? You scared him away. She said, well, I wanted to be able to take the other jewels on the other side, because I felt so bad for him. And the devotee was watching and heard this discussion or something. Either that or the couple went to Ramanujacharya and told what had happened. And not to complain that this Ramacharya had stolen from the ashram, stolen from our household belongings, but they're so poor. My wife disturbed him, so here's the other jewels. Someone that may be trying to renounce may be more attached to the person who has something but understands with detachment what its purpose is. So then that devotee could understand, well, why Ramanuja was so kind and fond of this particular couple. Because the devotee has only Krishna's shelter. They're not taking shelter in material objects of this world or mundane relationships in this world. They may dutifully observe those things and attend to those things, but their attachment, their shelter is not in those things. Their attachment or shelter is in the personality of Godhead. And when the devotee takes that full shelter in the personality of Godhead, the Lord gives himself to that devotee. From beautiful verses in the Bhagavatam when Durvasa Muni comes to Lord Vishnu, Sudarshan Chakra is coming after me, please give me shelter. Please remove this thing, it's burning me. And Lord Vishnu says, there's nothing I can do because I'm under the control of my devotee. Mars memories. But it's your Sudarshan Chakra. Yeah, but it's my Sudarshan Chakra, but I'm under the control of Mars memories. I can't do anything that's dependent on Mars memories. And here's why. Because as far as Maharaj Ambarish is concerned, there's nothing for him but me. And because of that, for me, there's nothing for me but him. You look inside the heart of Maharaj Ambarish and what do you find? There's nothing but me. Look inside my heart, what do you find? Nothing but him. Because my devotee is fully surrendered to him, I place myself subordinate to him. So you have to go ask him. Whatever he says, I'm obliged. And I can't act independently. That's what Lord Vishnu said. Go back to Durvasa Muni. If he says, do. That's the Supreme Lord. And the relationship, the intimate relationship between the unaware devotee and the Supreme Lord. Lord Krishna is the property of this pure, unconditional devotees. There were many situations where Lord Chaitanya spoke like this about his devotees. Vasudev Dutt is one of them. What do you know about Vasudev Dutt? Can you recall? Vasudev Dutt?
Who has told Chaitanya Mahaprabhu that I am unable to see the sufferings of this small body. So please transfer all the sufferings, whatever they are, to just to transform them and liberate all of them. So Mahaprabhu was so pleased.
Yeah. He said, he would say over and over again, I am Vasudev Dutt's man. He has purchased me. He can sell me in the marketplace for whatever price he wants. I declare again and again, I am the property of Vasudev Dutt. He can do with me whatever he likes. He said the same about Haridas Thakur. He can sell me at any price he likes. I am his property. I declare it again and again. I am the property of Thakur Haridas. And same with Vasudev Dutt. So, literally, not figuratively, literally, I have the property of the devotee who is fully surrendered unto me. Lord Sri Krishna is the property of his pure, unconditional devotees. And as such, only the devotees can deliver Krishna to another devotee. He can sell me for whatever price he likes. Like, you know, I'm a commodity and he's a person. He can sell me. I'm his slave. I'm his property. So the devotees that then desire to give Krishna consciousness to others can do so only if they're surrendered to Krishna, but they have themselves received the dust of the lotus feet of pure devotee. Krishna is never obtainable directly. That's the reverse statement, which is like the Jad Bharat saying to Aruga, not by tapasya, not by Vedic processes of worship, not by renounced order, not by discharging the duties of household life, chanting Vedic hymns, penances, austerities. Not by that. Not directly. But Chaitanya spoke the same. Gopi Bhartur Padakamali or Dasa, Dasa or Das, that he is, quote, the most obedient servant of the servant of the servants of the Lord who maintain the Gopi damsels at Vrindavan. Now, affirmatively, one more time. A pure devotee therefore never approaches the Lord directly, but tries to please the servant of the Lord's servants, and thus the Lord becomes pleased, and only then can the devotee relish the taste of the tulsi leaves stuck to his lotus feet. We've all experienced, you know, that after arati, the passing of the attar, the cotton with the fragrant oil that's been offered to the Lord, or a nice fragrant flower. And going back to the previous verse, we're not experiencing ecstasy. There's purification because it's paraphernalia of the Lord, but our heart is not melting. And how to get into that position of devotional service where devotion is pure? It's through the process or through the mood of serving the Lord's devotees. In the Brahma Samhita, it is said that the Lord is never to be found by becoming a great scholar of Vedic literature. But he is very easily approachable through his pure devotee. What's that verse? Vedeshu Durlabham Adurlabham Atma Bhakta, right? In Vrindavan, all the pure devotees pray for the mercy of Srimati Radharani, the pleasure potency of Lord Krishna. Srimati Radharani is a tender-hearted feminine counterpart of the Supreme Whole, resembling the perfectional stage of the worldly feminine nature. Therefore, the mercy of Radharani is available very readily to all the sincere devotees. And when she recommends such a devotee to Lord Krishna, Lord Krishna at once accepts the devotee's admittance into his association. The conclusion is, therefore, that one should be more serious about seeking the mercy of the devotee than that of the Lord directly. Last sentence of the purport. And by one's doing so, by the goodwill of the devotee, the natural attraction for the service of the Lord will be revived. What's the counterpart to this understanding from your first canto studies? Oh, first canto scholars. Chapter 2. Ityam Bhagavata Sevaya. What's the verse? Nashta Prayeshu Pamadreshu Ityam Bhagavata Sevaya. Bhagavati Bhujan Shurti Bhakti Bhakti Naishtaki Bhakti Bhakti Naishtaki Naishtaki Bhakti. It's poetic and in his expression, just after the steel-framed heart verse, excuse me, just before the steel-framed heart verse, so that's how one gets softened heart instead of hard heart, and it's the transition between practices and real feelings of devotion. Probably one of the top five questions that as I travel about in itinerant sannyasi, people want to know is, when will that experience come? I've been chanting and chanting, and when will real feelings of devotion come? Bhagavata Angri Renam or Mahatpado Rajo Vishekam. Adopting that mood of receiving the dust of the lotus feet of great devotees. Knowing that by so doing, Krishna will please when Krishna is pleased. Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya Bhagavati Uttama Shloke Bhaktir Bhavati Naishtaki. Real feelings of devotion arise in the heart, not temporal, circumstantial things, but from the soul proper, by Krishna's arrangement, he awakens the dormant feelings of devotion. So again, the next verse, certainly that heart is steel framed, which, in spite of one's chanting the holy name of the Lord with concentration, not just chanting, but chanting with concentration, the higher stages of devotion don't manifest. So, soften your hearts for those. Nice Bhagavatam message here. Any discussion? Yes.
When I say it sincerely to the third devotee, the focus means sometimes goes into the result that should come. What do we have to focus on? Sincerity in the left. We say that we have to do service sincerely.
Well, it depends. Two things come to mind. One thing is, if your mind goes to the result, what we're interested in when we're serving others is that we make a nice offering. Yes? You're cooking for the deities or something. You want to make a nice offering. But we all know very well our efforts alone aren't going to necessarily make a good offering. It's the mood of love and devotion with which we're engaging in that activity, not just controlling the outcome. So there's this, it's a subtle difference, but on the other hand, it's a world of difference between being concerned with making a nice offering and being thinking of oneself as the controller. I'm going to make a nice offering. It's not only in the field of, it's in all field of activities. I was having this discussion with one devotee about detached caring, where you're trying to help another person, but you understand my department is the service department. Krishna's department is the controlling department. I'm not the controller of the outcome. So your question was, I want a good result. Because the good result should be in the spirit of making a nice offering, in the spirit of devotion. But the outcome is completely up to Krishna. So it's staying in the relationship as a servant, in the mood of service. In the mood of service, I'd like to make a nice offering. I'd like to be able to be an instrument of Krishna so this other person can come out of a difficulty they're going through. Or, you know, become more successful in their spiritual life. I'd like to be better association. Take that, you know, amongst your own sangha here. I'd like to be a better instrument for everybody's advancement of Krishna consciousness. There's one problem, it's me. My impurities. But I'd like a good outcome. So it's the consideration goes to this humble mood of service. As stated in the purport, that's where it all begins. And then, when you say humble mood of service, who is it that I'm serving? Now we don't approach Krishna directly as the message we're hearing, so having a strong relationship with the servants of the servants of the servants, of those who are maintaining the main servants of Krishna, the gopis, then we can still be in the mood of wanting to make a nice offering, but not in the mood of controlling. That's where this Padarajobhishekam comes. It's a question of self-conception. A spiritual conception of self is, minimally, I'm spirit soul, not this body, I'm Brahmasmi, but far beyond that is, I'm simply an instrument
of Krishna's divine will. I want to make a nice offering, but I'm not able to do that independently. I'm striving, but I'm not independent. I'm not the controller. So we have to give up the controlling mentality while striving. That is accomplished through the mood of service. The mood of service is accomplished by understanding, by receiving mercy and staying fixed in that being the recipient of mercy mood. Then I can stay in the mood of service, even in striving to get a nice result. But it's not up to me. Because I'm not the controller, I'm not the doer. I'm not the... Krishna is the controller and Krishna is the doer of all outcomes. We're not impersonalists. We care. But there's this detachment in the sense of detached from the controlling spirit. I can't control this nice outcome. Every time I try, it spoils it. Every time. Without fail, every time it spoils it. Even if the outcome is there, it's still not satisfying. It's spoiled. But staying in the mood of service, I can strive like anything to make a nice outcome, but it's not up to me. It's staying in our constitutional position as servants, depending fully upon the mercy of Krishna. Next example comes in the next chapter, chapter 4. So you've got the flow of events. The sages are saying to Sutta, what happened next? What happened next? What did they say? What, please tell us. Sure enough, Maharaj Pariksit asks a wonderful question. Please describe Krishna Katha in this specific realm of Krishna Katha, how the Lord creates. Shukadeva Goswami, and he wants a good result, just following your question. Shukadeva Goswami doesn't. He doesn't speak immediately. He fixes in full concentration his mind upon the Supreme Lord and offers a prayer to the Supreme Lord. My dear Lord Krishna, he has the information, but he wants the result. Please empower my speaking in such a way that the heart of Maharaj Pariksit will be fully satisfied. Maharaj Pariksit has the information already. Shukadeva Goswami already has the information too. It's not just an information exchange exercise. It's an exercise of Maharaj Pariksit wants to experience in through the medium of pure devotion how the Lord does it. Shukadeva Goswami wants to give or be an instrument for Maharaj Pariksit to have that experience. And so he prays to the Supreme Lord. In fact, the next 12 verses are prayers to the Supreme Lord. Because that's his mood. He's fully dependent. He wants good outcome. He's got the goods. He can just hand them over. Here you go. See you later. He wants to give the experience of Krishna, of connecting with Krishna. He's fully dependent on Krishna to do that. It's really beautiful. Example. I guess it takes you inside the heart of a pure devotee and how he's experiencing, how he's feeling, how he's processing. Just, an exchange. So, in our lives, we have some little services that we do. We don't have to enlighten Maharaj Pariksit, but we have other services that we do. And we would like a nice outcome. things about the personality of God, even we know exactly what to do. For without help. That's the lesson. Then to go there. Anything else? Yes? You're looking for clarification. Sure. By, so just to repeat, especially for the purpose of the recording, till your voice is soft. When we receive instructions on how to carry out our service and we absorb ourselves in doing those services in the ways that we've been instructed how to do those services, that helps us develop an absorption in hearing the message of Krishna. Yeah? Nityam Bhagavatasevya, same verse. This major anarta, or like the foundational anarta that upon which all other anartas rest, is the spirit of independence. And if we can think fundamentally the spirit of dependence, that's Bhagavatasevam. The person Bhagavata. Then we can hear the book Bhagavata and the Avadras Nityam Bhagavatasevya, the Nashta Prayeshu Avadreshu. Eradicated. Then we can hear. So it's a progressive thing, because even hearing instructions that we receive, we hear with our filters. Selectively what we like to hear, and we don't hear what we don't like to hear. Just like, you know, there's all kinds of sounds going on outside. And if we're absorbed in the discussion, then that sound becomes less, of course, unless the 747 flies over or someone blares their scooter horn, and it's just very intrusive. So it's progressive. There needs to be a growing attachment. Where it's all going is attachment to Krishna. So to get the attachment to Krishna comes attachment for those who are attached to Krishna. You get Krishna attachment. And then with attachment to those who are attached to Krishna comes instructions how to become attached to Krishna. So we need to be attentive to those things, and when the topics of Krishna come, certainly attentiveness to the topics of Krishna in a way that other people can't experience. They do not experience, and they cannot experience.
Everything is filled with expectation, like suppose I do some assignment or write some paper, or do something, the purpose is that I will write paper or something. So, before the food is to be educated.
You lost me. Do it again. One more time. In academic service.
If I do something, then before we meditate, that this is the result that I get.
Okay, when you have an academic assignment, there is some result that's expected, and you're, while doing the academic assignment, you're meditating on the result that's expected of you. That's called fruitive mentality, right? Welcome to the club. Called the material world. And so? What's the solution? That's your question. Cultivate. It's not like you're in this bucket or you're in that bucket. There's this gradual, like the rising of the sun kind of metaphor, a gradual cultivation of doing the same thing, thinking how this part of my life, this academic part of my life, can be offered as a service to Krishna. And you can answer that in a number of different ways. But be conscious of that, you know, in your case, because of the training, the particular training that you're receiving is how to use your career in some form or another of service to Krishna. So this is just one step in that bigger picture. You look at the bigger picture, you're doing what you're doing under the guidance of your teacher so that you can make an offering of your life in service to Krishna. Yes? That part is clear. So the little step, put that in the context of the bigger picture. Doing this particular assignment is just part of that spiritual trajectory. The real thing I want is not I get the assignment done and I get, you know, 5 gold stars after my name. I get some sort of certificate that I did a good job with this particular project or problem solving. But that I'm now, my consciousness is more absorbed, more deeply absorbed in how to make this an offering to Krishna. You know, and then I'm obviously leaving out details for a number of reasons. Your life and recording and so many other things, you know. And you have your own realizations. But the principle, so this has broader application. Step back, because one of the things that passion does is it draws one into attachment to the fruit, and you lose sight of anything but the fruit. What's the big thing? Bigger picture, bigger picture, bigger picture. What's my life? Who am I? I'm not a problem solver in academics. That's not who I am. I may or may not have a very clear understanding of how this particular problem fits into a life that's offered in service to Krishna. But when I step back, I can see how this phase of my life can certainly be dedicated in service to Krishna. So then what you've done is you've detached yourself from that fruitive mentality, and you put a little devotional high test in your tank. So then you can approach that assignment, academic assignment, with a whole other perspective. It doesn't diminish whatever skills over all the years that you developed. They're not taken away from you. They're not reduced in their efficacy either. But you have like a spiritual something, a beginning. So you cultivate and cultivate like that. And it's true in any field of service. There's challenges wherever you go. I'm just thinking, in my service, let's say, you know, being able to present the Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam in a way that that's going to help the devotees grow in Krishna consciousness. One could get attached to the material side of that. But that's not where effectively doing the service of a renunciant comes. It's the deeper Krishna consciousness. And same with the challenge. So that's the application of that challenge is different for you because of, you know, the nature of your service, the nature of your prospective ashram. So there's challenges over here, there's challenges over there. But the principle is the same. And the art of work is learning how to do it for Krishna, not to do it for the achieving the result. And then you have all these, you have your fruit and results basket over here, and it's really big and full. And so you're successful. That's, you know, what the other people are doing. And your training is different. Results don't become less, but there's a whole other, your attention is not there. Train the mind or the heart to give yourself to service to Guru and Krishna. And that's your cultivation, that's your practice. Something else? Having bad health or not what?
Not obeying the instructions in
the inattention. Inattention.
So that internal consciousness, internal forces, sometimes it is making us to some guilty feelings, not able to do our circumstances or situation. So it makes us in the next, blocking us to further determination.
Okay. Good point. That's a trick of Maya. And particularly the mode of ignorance type of Maya. Because the mode of ignorance induces one to lament. And through lamenting, decreasing the spirit of devotion. It's like this rule of thumb. Spiritual is what increases one's remembrance of Krishna and surrender to Krishna. What's material is that which decreases one's remembrance of Krishna and surrender to Krishna. So that's material. The illness is not material. And even the regret is not material. But staying there is material. Because regret can be like a springboard for higher. An impetus. So, what Maya covers is the spirit of submission and surrender and enthusiasm to go further on the spiritual path. Maya covers that. So, it's the modes of nature acting when that happens. And best is just, you know, the strength of your attachment for Krishna, for Krishna consciousness and devotion, attachment for Guru and Krishna is so strong that it just bypasses that ignorance. Next best is knowledge. That's the mode of ignorance, and I'm not going to surrender to ignorance. I'm going to surrender to goodness. I'm going to continue with my duty figured out, oh, that's right, it will elevate me. It's just, it's like a visual image is like making a path. Like you're walking along and there's a path that's very seldom traveled, there's a path that's often traveled. Don't go down that path that's often traveled, the mode of ignorance path. Go this other one. Recognize when you're at the juncture, don't go there, go there. Okay. Ill health, I failed to apply an instruction, etc. Now I'm at this juncture, now what am I going to do? You're making a choice. You don't have to go down the path of ignorance. You can choose. It's clear there's a path there, it's just very few people go down the path, and so it's easier to go down the path of ignorance. I'm going to go down this other path. That's the example in Nectar of Devotion. It's like a child learning to walk. You stumble and fall. You get up. You start walking again. Don't just sit there and cry. What's that? It's ignorance. Get up. Continue to walk. Krishna will help you. It's that simple. And, you know, going back to this question over here about wanting a good result, the good result we want is depending upon Krishna. Whatever may happen, result-wise, in the material sense, the real result we want is that we're just dependent upon Krishna. So when you're dependent upon Krishna, you pick yourself up, you dust yourself off, and off you go. Confident that however many times it takes, I see the light, there it is, and I'm heading for the light. Over here is darkness, and I want to stay in darkness. It's long enough I've had it, I'm going to Krishna. And there's this path to Krishna. With determination, with a sense of dependency. Embedded within those moments of realizing, oh, I was inattentive to instructions that I was given. Embedded in that moment is some very, very valuable information and understanding. This bad situation comes from inattentiveness. Let me remain attentive. That's the positive. That's the springboard effect. Let me remain attentive. Let me redouble my effort. When Krishna sees that, you've got Krishna's helping hand. And bad health? Any little bad health that any one of you may have doesn't at all match what people really have bad health have to deal with. It's like, you know, some people, it's super chronic. It's their limbs don't function. They're, you know, so many things. How are they going to stay fixed in Krishna consciousness? Not by lamenting. By taking whatever the strength of Krishna gives and applying it in a measured way. If your health has been down, you can do less. But what you can do, you do with Krishna consciousness. It's a challenge. consider yourself fortunate rather than unfortunate? I just met a man that I hadn't seen in 2 years. Nice devotional man. He's semi-retired in his mid-60s. We were really happy to see one another. The first thing he said was, "How's your health?" You know, kind of like a conventional question. I said, "My health is good." He said, "That's good." What I found out later in the course of the discussion was he had after having 8 angioplasties, he just recently, some months ago, had an open heart surgery because one of his arteries collapsed. Now, this is a very active man. He just was unable to do anything for a long time. He was speaking from realization, good health is very important. So, do things that maintain your health. Don't just, put the pedal to the floor and keep going until everything breaks down. But do things that maintain good health. And if the health goes down, that's just part of having a material body. We tolerate it, keep within the capacity we have, and we move forward. Health is very important. I hope this meets you in good health, whoever well wisher. You see Bhaktivedanta Swami. Always wishing good health upon his devotees. We need that for service, and if that's taken away, the service is reduced. That's not therefore a cause for lamentation. It's yet another opportunity to depend on Krishna in a different way. Okay. See the Prabhupada, he died.